The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes, coming to you cordless, everybody. It's Thursday night, March 14th, 2024. It's 11 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8 p.m. on the West Coast, 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, and 10 p.m. Central Time, where I'm sitting here in Northeast Minneapolis. I am Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters at Night, episode number 96. And yeah, as I was saying before we were so rudely interrupted, okay, so I ended up taking up a couple of days off here, which I was not expecting. We did not do shows on Tuesday and Wednesday. That was not expected. And basically, here's the deal. Everything blew up. I had a family emergency. Our website was offline simultaneously, and that got dragged into bureaucratic hell. That went, our website went offline on early Monday morning, and early Tuesday morning, and came back on late last night, late Wednesday night, something like that. I don't know. I am fucked up. What can I tell you? It has not been a good couple of days. And so I'm putting on my game face here. I'm doing this. I'm glad to talk to you guys again. I feel at home here. So, whatever. Anyway, thank you for tuning in. Really appreciate it. You tune in. It's like, if you know, that's what we used to do years ago with the radio. We tuned it. Oh, man. Okay, so tonight our guest is David Strom, associate editor of hotair.com. Now, here's the deal. So we taped this. We didn't do a show last night, but we taped this yesterday afternoon. We were going to do a show last night, and that blew up, too. So, but the thing is, this interview ended up being 93 minutes long. So we're doing something different here. We're busting it up into two parts. We're doing part one tonight and then part two on Monday night. Got it? Let's see how this works. Talking to a friend of mine today, he said, well, did you think about doing it in two parts? And I said, no, I didn't. And I thought, okay, let's try it. What the heck? You know, we're going to experiment. We're 96 shows into this. And speaking of that, so I think I announced this on Monday that Facebook canned my account. Okay, so that was Monday night. Tuesday, they get back to me and say, no, we made a mistake. We're really sorry. We reinstated your account. Great, fine. Page for the show is offline, though. And so it took me a couple days to figure out that, yeah, they restored my personal account, but they've deleted the page for the show. That we can't do, well, apparently that's verboten. Now, I have a long history of animosity with Facebook. I've been fucked around by these people for several years. So we're off of Facebook. That's all there is to it. That's pretty much what they want. It's pretty obvious. I could appeal this. I'm not going to. Fuck them. That's all I have to say. And also, we're also dropping Odyssey, too. Because it's just a pain in the ass, and nobody's watching there. So I want to give you a list here. This is the place. Now, I'm going to have this updated this weekend, the updated list on the watch page on our website at jimatnight.com. But right now we are on Rumble, YouTube, Twitter, or X, or whatever you want to call it, Twitch, Trovo, and we're also doing audio only on Blog Talk Radio. That's where we're at right now. We've dropped Odyssey. Before we started, we dropped OnlyFans. That was really weird. And the thing is, you know, I'm kind of glad that they're getting a worse and worse reputation. all the, you know, they're really trying to push those things about the fact that it's not all porn. And I thought, okay, fine. But I couldn't, it was impossible for you to verify my identity. You have to verify your identity to actually open, to at least to stream video on an account there. And I couldn't do it. I did everything they asked multiple times. It did not work. So screw it. So anyway, that's where we're at. That's where we're at right now. I got to apologize to Jennifer Oliver O'Connell. She was supposed to be on last night. And also my apologies, heartfelt apologies to Michael Harrison. He was supposed to be on Tuesday night. Now, Jennifer is coming on. She's part of the dynamic duo with Jeff Meyer. So she's coming on next Wednesday anyway. Michael Harrison, unfortunately, is having surgery in a few days. So we're probably not going to get him in anytime soon. And I want to get the date right here. Our 100th show is going to be a week from Monday, March 25th. And one of the reasons Michael was coming on here is because he wanted to, we were going to play his new music video. He's a member of the band Gun Hill Road, which has been active since the 1960s, still making music. And they're still making music videos. And they've been quite successful, actually. And the amazing thing is, of course, Michael is the founder and publisher of Talkers Magazine, which is the industry Bible for talk media in the United States. Because most of their songs are issue oriented. This latest one is called Damn Scammers, and it's about being scammed online. They get played mostly, their music is played mostly on talk radio stations, which is kind of, on irony, I've noticed this. Talk radio has a tendency, the music they play for bumpers, or which is in and out of commercials. And Don Imus was famous for this. He would play almost an entire song for 2 or 3 minutes in and out of commercials, just because it was mostly country music because that's what he liked. But that's cool. But there is, relatively speaking, there's music played on talk radio. Now, on this show, because this is really weird, so you can license music to play on terrestrial radio and internet radio, but this show is not considered internet radio, even though we're on Blog Talk Radio, it isn't. So because of that, we can't license music. So the theme song for this show is I wrote myself. I've never known what to call it. I call it Midtown almost a default because it goes along with the skyscraper shit at the beginning. That's downtown Minneapolis, by the way, if you haven't figured that out. We don't really play a lot of music here, but terrestrial radio stations, they play their bumper music, And so Gun Hill Road, a band that's been around since the 1960s, if I'm right, Michael wasn't an original member, but he's been on it. He's been part of it for a long time. They're still pumping out music, and they make these really cool music videos using partially AI. One music video they did, the one they did for World Radio Day, if I'm right, when Michael was on here on World Radio Day, and don't ask me how the hell that happened. I mean, the guy's working for the United Nations, and he came on this show, I think it was that video they did, that music video that was entirely generated by AI. It was an experiment they did. It looked fantastic. It looked kind of surreal too. Yeah, it did, but still, it was really cool. So anyway, they're pumping out music. So on our 100th show, a week from Monday, because Michael, we had to can Michael on Tuesday. We're gonna play his music video. Maybe we can get him on the phone. He will be like 4 or 5 days out of surgery. I'm going to talk to him. So I don't know how it's going to be to talk to us or anybody. But at any rate, that's what's going on. That's what's been going on here. Yeah, we screwed a bunch of shit up. That's what happened. So tonight, David Strom Part 1. Next Monday, David Strom Part 2. Tuesday of next week, Les Velez, the guy, he is the founder and chairman, of the Organization for Paranormal Understanding Support, OPUS. Now, this is a support group that he started for people who say they've been abducted by aliens. And you may laugh, but for most people, this is a really traumatic thing. And also, the majority of people who say they've been abducted are usually abducted multiple times. So, and no one can really figure out why. you know, the thing is, if you're going to buy this, and I do, I, you know, it's like, it's the normal type of thing. Many and maybe even the majority of people are lying, but I don't think all of them are. If you're going to buy it, no one's really figured out their agenda. And the thing is, it's usually, we have a whole bunch of different species visiting this flying and visiting this planet. I mean, I'm convinced of that. Supposedly, the U.S. military has identified 60 different species of aliens, supposedly. And this starts in the 1960s, where there were supposedly four of them. And they keep identifying more species. But the ones that are most associated with alien abductions are the classic gray aliens, which supposedly are from Zeta Reticuli, which is a star system, a double solar system, 37 light years from Earth. That's where supposedly they're at. There's two suns there. So you have planets going around two different suns. And apparently the people who've talked to this, and the thing is, and this is another thing, on April 22nd, we're going to have Kathleen Martin on the show. And it was her aunt, she was the niece of Betty Hill, the woman who was Betty and Barney Hill, who was abducted supposedly in 1961. And they did not want any publicity at all. They weren't looking for help because they were having a real hard time dealing with it mentally. So they went to a psychiatrist, a guy named Benjamin Simon, and Simon didn't know what to do. So he put them under hypnosis, the first time it ever happened. And they both spilled out virtually identical stories, even though they were hypnotized separately, about being abducted by these little gray beings. And so but this happened to Betty, and it's happened to apparently a lot of other people who say they've been abducted too. And that is usually the standard scenarios is the aliens are pretty cold and clinical, and they do a bunch of medical experiments. But after they're done, they kind of warm up a little bit. And so supposedly Betty said that after they were done with their procedure, she asked them, "Where are you from?" And one of the guys on the ship, well, the guys, you know, here's the deal. They're people, okay? You know, they might not be humans, but they're still people. So I'm going to call one of the guys, took her into a room and showed her a large map on a holographic screen and said, "We're from there." And he said, "This doesn't mean anything to you." And the reason he said that, supposedly, is he knew that in 1961, wasn't until 2006 or something like that. In 1961, no one on the planet Earth had ever seen Zeta Reticuli, which was a double star system. So you have two suns, which kind of, I can't remember the term. They rotate around each other, and then around those two suns, they each have a solar system. So it's a really, really weird, supposedly, of all the planets on that double solar system, two of them evolved alien life. And so they were literally looking at each other across the divide. What happened was Betty, you know, said, you know, "Where are you from?" And he showed her and said, you know, "This is where we're from." And there were trade routes on this map. He said, we do trade without these other civilizations, these other planets, you know. And he said, "Here's your sun and here's Earth." Okay, fine. Very great. So Dr. Simon asked Betty under hypnosis to draw the map. And she did. She drew a map. Stanton Friedman, who was Kathleen Martin's friend, and they wrote several books together. Stanton passed away, I think, 6 years ago, if I'm right, 2018. He said that this is a smoking gun of extraterrestrial encounters, because a woman named Marjorie Fish, she taught high school astronomy. She wasn't even a college professor. She taught high school astronomy. She saw this map that Betty drew in a book and said, "Well, I'm going to figure out where the hell that is." And it took her quite a while, I think a couple of years, because the map of what Betty drew was a two-dimensional interpretation of a map she saw in three dimensions that was basically projected into the air. It was a holographic map. You know, holograms, you know, they're three-dimensional. So you could walk around it. So she drew this map of, you know, obviously on paper. And so Marjorie spent a couple of years looking into this, and she finally figured out it was Zeta Reticuli. But the thing is, like I said, no, in 1965, when Betty drew the map, nobody on the planet Earth knew where Zeta Reticuli was. So you have, what you're faced with is this. This is what Stan Friedman said. You're faced with the fact that a New Hampshire housewife was the only person on the planet who knew where Zeta Reticuli existed, or her story's true. And that's basically it. And so there were 5 billion people on planet Earth, and she wasn't a trained astronomer. I'm talking about Betty Hill. She wasn't trained in anything. She was literally a housewife. And so, yeah, and Stan said this is a smoking gun, because there's only two alternatives there, and one of them doesn't make any sense. So anyway, so Kathy Martin's coming on in April, on April 22nd. And so I brought this up because of the fact that, yeah, most of the people who say they've been abducted by aliens say they've been abducted by the gray aliens, but not all of them. Not all of them. And most people say they've been abducted more than once. There seems to be some, a history or some idea that people that this runs in families. It's just, anyway, so Les Velez, this guy we're going to talk to on Tuesday, and he also wrote a book called The Unknown Other. And I've read the book. You know, I got to tell you. And you should, I recommend the book, because you've heard of all these stories about people. You know, I said, like I said, there's a classic abduction scenario. And they're written by his clients, and of course, anonymously. They're just really, really wild. I mean, just crazy, crazy, you know, like Carson used to say, weird, wild stuff, you know? So at any rate, yeah, so we're going to talk to him. He's on next Tuesday. Thursday, we got Jazz Shar, our old friend. He's the weekend editor of hotair.com. He's a UFO guy for the Salem Media Properties. He writes about politics and UFOs, and that's what I do. And we're from the different brothers from the same different mothers or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, I always look forward to seeing him. Monday, a week from Monday, April 1st, we're doing our annual, or not annual, our monthly, month in review. So we have the month in review panel here. Don Zorro, Tim McConaway, and Larry Newman, if I'm right, everybody's going to be there. The whole, right now, that's what it looks right now. The whole gang's going to be there, and we basically shoot for an hour. It was the Conk New Weekend News podcast team, and we're basically just getting, we get together once a month. That's what we got. That's from Monday. I'm taking rest of that week off, and that's the lineup. Now, I just updated the front page of our website. On our website at GemandKnight.com, at the bottom of the front page, there's a listing of guests that are coming up. And also, there's a little sidebar there of posts, the recent posts in our blog, too. Like, I'm going to be posting over the weekend a link to David Strom's stuff on Hot Air. And you want to read that. We had a really great conversation. My problem is I can't stop talking to this guy. That's my problem. It was 93 minutes. And we could have gone on longer. I mean, I still had questions. It's like, so anyway, yeah, so I hope you like this. So we're going to play half of it, about 44 minutes tonight, and the rest of it on Monday. So you can call in for the first half of the show or the last half. But now, because our website's up and running, all the call-in stuff is working. We got our video call-in with your webcam, GemandKnight.com/call. You go to that webpage. I know this sounds weird, but it's really well. You go to that webpage, you click the big blue button at the top of the screen, you're in our preview page, you check your camera and mic, and then you hit join at the bottom, and you're in the video queue, and I put you on the air. It's every person I've taught has done this. I ask every single person. It's simple as can be. It's even simpler than making a FaceTime call. It is. You can do this. You know, our longtime caller, David from San Francisco, he said the first time he did it, he said, I had a harder time finding your website than actually calling in. And that's true. You know, You can call by audio only. You can call with your phone via the good people at Blog Talk Radio. And the number there is 563-999-3435 on the screen right there. And you hear the sexy British lady. she is. She's British and she's sexy. And so she will tell you that you connected, and then you listen to the show until I put you on. And finally, you can send me a text in real time. That number right here, 408-458-5088. I get while the show is going. If you're on any of the platforms, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, or like Twitch, and your those chat rooms that are there running while we're on the air, I can't see them, and I got to be honest, I refuse. There's a lot of people who follow all this stuff, but I think they're morons because it's like the show's terrible because they're literally spending so much time reading. And I know I'm the traditionalist and I'm an old fart. I know that. I know that the youngins, they don't care. I understand. You know, I'm trying to make, you know, I spend my life in presentation. I'm trying to make do a reasonable presentation. I'm not going to sit here and read just scrolls and scrolls of text while I'm on camera. I'm not going to. But if you send me a text message, that I got a screen off the side, that I will get. So that's the deal. If you want to actually communicate with me during the show, you can send me a text. If you don't want to call in, you can send me a text message at that number. You can also call that number. And if you do, you can leave a 30-second voicemail. We get a few voicemails, not a lot. I've always threatened that we're going to put the funny ones on the air, but we've never so far. It's not enough to justify me going through the work of doing that. But yeah, so you can leave me a 30-second voicemail too. That I don't get while the show's on. All right, my God, it's like what, like blah blah blah. But the problem here, the problem with today is that we had so much time off and so much shit went wrong, and it's like. So, anyway, finally, this is really important. I'd like to thank our people who sponsor the show. Our sponsor is Conk News, and here's their front page of Conk News right now. This is in real time, and the reason that's important is because this page updates every 3 hours. You'll see the articles here. You can't see my cursor. I keep forgetting this. You got a bunch of women making a class action lawsuit against the NCAA to keep out trans men or trans women or whatever they're called. I don't know. I'm losing track. And here, a former Secretary of the Treasury, Mnuchin, he's trying to put together a group to buy TikTok. And that's, I got that on the rundown, and we talked about this on Monday, but it bears talking about again. So the dishonest liars at TikTok are flooding TikTok, their actual app. If you sign in the last 4 or 5 days, when you sign in, you get a message saying Congress is trying to ban TikTok. Call Congress, your congressman, and tell them not to. And Congress has been flooded with calls from TikTok users. Several people have said it's the most calls they've ever gotten about anything. And you got teenagers who are threatening to kill themselves. You got people who are threatening to kill for doing this. And yet here's the amazing thing. Congress is not banning TikTok. All they've said is that the Chinese company that owns it has to sell it to an American company. They said if that doesn't happen in 6 months, then they will ban TikTok. But they're not actually banning TikTok. And TikTok is putting out these goddamn press releases saying, well, it doesn't matter how they try to dress this up, it's a ban. No, it's not. It is not a ban. Everyone in America seems to think that if you lie loud and hard enough, you can change the truth. No, you can't. It's not a ban. Got that? But it will be a ban if they can't sell the thing. They should be able to. There's plenty of people who are interested in buying it. Now, Trump has come out. He says they don't think they should do this because he said he's afraid if TikTok does go away that Facebook will end up inheriting their users because of Facebook and Instagram, or Meta, excuse me, because I'm just talking about the fact we just got banned by Facebook. So they, and so, you know, I'm with Trump. He says he doesn't want Zuckerberg to have any more wealth, power, or users than he already has. And yeah, let me just get straight to the point here. Mark Zuckerberg can go fuck himself. I mean, I've had so much trouble with this company. So I'm telling my friend today, I had lunch with a friend, and I'm telling him about this. He said, but, you know, he said, you don't have a lot of viewers yet. I said, no, I don't. And it's true. I mean, who are you fooling, right? Why would they ban you? Yeah, that's a damn good question. You'd like to think that I'm not important enough for them to bother with, but they do. They, matter of fact, this is not the first time this has happened to me. So, shit. But anyway, Trump says, no, don't shut down TikTok, because then Zuckerberg will inherit the users. And here's the thing with this. I don't think that's true. And the reason is because the reason TikTok is so popular, it is now the most popular social application on the internet in America. The reason is, I've been on TikTok. It's really easy to use. And this is the thing. The Facebook interface, it doesn't matter how you access it, app, web, whatever, it sucks. It just plain sucks. You know? You can't go like 30 seconds on Facebook without them hitting you up to place an ad I suppose that's working for them as far as collecting money, but Jesus, the interface is terrible. And it's true. The Chinese, once again, have taken an idea we did. They've done it one better. I mean, you have to give them credit. That's the thing. TikTok is popular because it's really, really user-friendly. And on top of that, they don't really ban people for what they say. I mean, you know, they got a little content moderation, you know, but it's pretty extreme. They don't have, they're not like the social justice warriors at Facebook who can Jim Peters at night because apparently I'm saying the wrong thing. I actually don't know why they banned, why they stuck on our page. I don't really give a shit anymore. I'm not even going to ask them. I asked them before why they canceled my account, and they said, well, you have violated the terms of service. Which ones? Oh, they finally got back to me and said, well, you're not a real person. I said, yes, I am. And then they got back to me and said, we made a mistake. You are. You are a real person. We'll reinstate your account, but not the page. Not the page for the show. No. Do I sound bitter? Yeah. It's bullshit. But, you know, it's like, and then my friend says, he watches the show. He says, you know, you're not that extreme. I said, no shit, I'm not. There's people who are way, way more extreme than me. And I think they're still on there. I don't know. You know, I don't know. But that's the thing. TikTok is a really, really, it's a nice experience to use. I am appalled by what people consider to be entertainment. I mean, so, you know, I was a former editor-in-chief of our sponsor, Kong News, and Jeff Meyer, who owns Kong News, this is about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, while I'm working there. He said, Jim, get on TikTok and see if you want to get in and do this. Now, there's two reasons this show is not on TikTok. First of all, TikTok runs exclusively portrait vertical videos, and we don't shoot that way. And I'm not going to try to reprocess this. I mean, we are doing landscape, classic HD television signal. So let me take this off screen. So we don't broadcast that way. And also the fact that the Chinese own it, I won't have anything to do with it. You know, I know that, you know, everyone and their brother, the people, I do not consider this to be hypocrisy. About the fact that the Biden says he will sign this bill, even though his campaign is on TikTok. But here's the deal: as long as it's legal, as long as it's open, you know, let people use it. But I won't deal with the Chinese that way. I just don't. I gotta admit, I just think they're evil. You know, we have a lot of guests on here from the Epoch Times, the Chinese American newspaper, and I said this. I really do believe this. That the Epoch Times and the Wall Street Journal are the only two newspapers in America worth paying for. I love the Epoch Times, but if you look at the Wikipedia entry for the Epoch Times, they will call the Epoch Times, right-wing extremists. Yeah, well, okay, so what's their problem? They hate the Chinese Communist Party. Oh, shit. I do, too. I'm not getting on TikTok. I refuse. So, but even still, there's the technical aspect of it. I got to admit, I might have considered it if it wasn't for that, but I'm not going to even try. It's just too hard to do. All right, we're going to, I'm on my soapbox here. This is really, I almost have to apologize. We spent 20 minutes just burning through announcements because of all the crap that's been going on over here the last few days. So I will come back after the interview airs. I got something about, we have some UFO news. So we'll do that. But right now we're going to play the first half of our interview with David Strom. And to do that, I'm going to play a little bumper music. Here we go. Are we talking about bumper music? Yeah, I wrote this. Joining us from his home in North Minneapolis, the associate editor of HotAir.com, David Strom. David, good afternoon.
It's always good to be on with you.
Oh, man, I can't tell you. You know, it's like you, I mean, you've been on a real tear lately on Hot Air. I read your stuff daily, and, man, you know, it's like, God bless you for doing what you do, you know. So we got a zillion questions today. I want to start out with, there's an article you just posted, like, in the last couple of hours. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time here on Wednesday, and the article about the Indigenous Canadians in Vancouver. you can't make this shit up. You want to go ahead and explain it?
Well, it really is great. It encapsulates the current socialist, liberal, awful, you know, the affluent white liberal women.
Yeah, what a great acronym.
Yes. Anyway, the basic facts are that, indigenous people of Canada are beginning to enforce treaty rights. You know, they signed a lot of treaties back in the 19th century, and they got screwed on a lot of them. And they've won some legal cases that have afforded them some land, including within some Canadian cities. I mean, they're not taking over, you know, all of Canada again. But, you know, they're getting compensation that they're due. And in Vancouver, which is a beautiful city and liberal city, and an incredibly wealthy and crowded city, there are several tribes that have access to, you know, parcels of land, 10, 12 acres here and there. And in Vancouver, real estate prices are ridiculous. The housing supply is very short. And, you know, the cost of living is awful. And so what these tribes decided to do with this land was not turn it into sort of, you know, places where you worship the land. They're building housing, and they're not just building housing, they're building skyscrapers. And this is driving the awfuls nuts. It's like, you are supposed to be the back to the land, worship the land people. You're supposed to be building wigwams and carving totem poles and all of that. And instead, they are like, well, you know, we're going to live the Canadian dream, you know? Build this stuff, and the skyscrapers are gorgeous.
And also, it bears the example you wrote about in particular. You're talking about only 10 acres, which is actually not that big a piece of land. So, yeah, you're putting, if you put like 10 skyscrapers on that, you're basically talking about Rockefeller Center. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah, it is going to be the most dense housing in Canada, and it actually violates all the zoning regulations in Vancouver, but this is their land and it's sovereign territory. And so basically they're going like this, you know, to all these liberals. And I'm like, I love these guys. You know?
Oh, we should point out here, you and I both live in Minneapolis. So Minnesota, the Native American casinos are legion. We have one outside here in Minneapolis called Mystic Lake, which is basically the, I think it's the closest you can get to Las Vegas outside of Las Vegas. I'm from Red Wing, Minnesota, where Treasure Island is. If you had come up to me in high school 50 years ago and said, someday there's going to be a giant casino in town, I would have told you you were fucking nuts. But it's there. It's the second largest casino in the state, and Mystic Lake is the first. And God bless these people. They have completely, you know, what's the white man's weakness? Gambling.
Yeah, we handed them alcohol in the 19th century.
That's right. I know. It's hilarious. It's just hilarious. And, you know.
Well, one of the weirdest things for me, I grew up in Arizona, and I actually taught on the Navajo Reservation for 2 summers. And so I have a very different view of Native American relations with white people than a lot of Minnesotans do. And I think there are historical reasons for that. Minnesota tends, I mean, let's face it, Minnesotans tend to be kind of racist against Indians.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of hostility there, although it's actually understandable because Minnesota is dominated by families that have been here for generations. And, you know, there were massacres on both sides in the 19th century. So it's, you know, it is family lore, just as the Civil War is family lore in the South, which is why you see a lot more focus on that. In Arizona, everyone's from somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
And so you go to a reservation there, and it's like, this is a shithole. These people got a really bad deal, and there's no family history or anything like that to sort of color how people look at it. So I've always been much more sympathetic to the plight of Native Americans. I think that they got screwed twice.
But hold on a second. Wouldn't you say my experience is that here in Minnesota, before the casinos, the reservations were shitholes too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, when I moved to Minnesota in 1982, so well before the casinos. And when I first heard about Native Americans, it was always in the context of alcoholism and homelessness in the streets. Either they were on the reservation and they were kind of shitholes. But the people who were in the cities were worse off.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them were homeless, alcoholics, and post casinos, there's been a lot of effort, by Indian tribes to help out people whose lives had been ruined. Now I happen to think that one of the biggest mistakes that was made was pretending that you could freeze time, you know, create these reservations and try to stop history.
Are you talking about like stopping history or reversing history?
Well, really reversing history. And that's basically the complaint in Vancouver is that, you know, the Indians aren't playing what a friend of mine called the dirt worshiping heathen role. You know, he got into a lot of trouble with that, but
I understand.
but that's actually what a lot of liberals want the Indians to be. You know, sort of this. You know, they want the crying Indian with the headdress, oppressed by the white man, and the idea that you know a Native American could join the modern world is offensive to them.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, we're wiping out their culture. And, you know, that's actually total bullshit.
It is.
All you need to know, if you know anything about history, Native American culture died when disease from Europe came over.
Right.
Just as really medieval society in Europe died when the Black Plague came from China, you know, China and Mongolia. Disease, and, you know, there wiped out in Europe, the Black Plague wiped out 40 to 60% of Europeans. Here, because there was so, you know, no communication between the New World and the Old World, it was closer to 90%. And so, you know, it's like Native society was dead. It's not even clear that, you know, in pre-Columbian, you know, America, the natives were Stone Age before the diseases. You know, there were civilizations here that collapsed because of the diseases. And that wasn't because white men were trying to kill them off. I mean, that sort of came later. You know?
Yeah, right.
This was just
here's
pure biology. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not that white men didn't do, like, really shitty things to Indians, but that's not what killed off. In fact, you know, when we think of Native Americans, we think of them on horses. Well, those came over from Europe. You know, much of what we, you know, horses, sheep, you know, a lot of the herding that we think of that was associated with Native Americans actually was already part of the cultural invasion that had taken place. So, you know, pre-Columbian America died in 1492, and it, it had nothing to do with, you know, colonization or anything else. It was just pure biology. You had an isolated, biologically isolated group that suddenly was exposed to diseases that Europeans had been adapting to for millennia.
And yeah, you're saying basically there was no intent.
No, there certainly was later on.
Yeah.
But even that was inevitable. I mean, that's sort of human history.
Yeah, that's how come, you know, I have a hard time with, I guess it's the way you look at things. I have a hard time with the whole deal about your recolonization. Well, it's over. You know, I mean, we hate to say it. We fucked those people. And, you know, yeah, we're sorry, but it's over. And it happened a long, long time ago. Same thing, my problem with reparations. There's not a single person alive today who was a slave. Not a single one. So we'd even have a hard time figuring out who would get the money. I mean, shit, you know, it's done. You know, I mean, that's my personal thing. I don't know. But it's the same thing with the Indians, too, you know?
Well, you could go, I mean, if you start down this path, you know, think about Turkey. Turkey used to be Greek. You know, Istanbul used to be Constantinople. And what happened was you had the steppe people who came from Asia and drove out all the Greeks. And that's human history. They're, you know, let's go back and have the Germans pay reparations to the Romans. I mean,
yeah, right. Where does it stop?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Great Britain, if you look at that, I mean, it is the population is not the original population. There were several waves of invasion. I mean, you know, in fact, the royal family, they're all descended from William the Conqueror, who was a Norman. The Normans were Vikings who had settled in France. Northern Great Britain was a different group of Vikings. You know, the Anglo-Saxons before them were invaders who came after the Roman Empire, and the Roman Empire was invaders. You know, so,
yeah. Everybody was invaders.
Yes. I mean, that is world history. And does it suck? Yes, it sucks. But it's also just the way that it is.
And right.
No way. Just as, I mean, my, you know, most people, not all, but most people in the United States are descended from people who were fleeing oppression from somewhere. And most of us have bloodlines that go back to, well, most of us, almost everybody, people who were oppressed. And that's everyone in the world. But most of us also have bloodlines of people who were oppressors, including African Americans. I mean, most people don't realize that the African slave trade, you know, originated with, you know, black African tribes who were capturing other black Africans and selling them.
Yes, there were a lot of black African slave owners, and most people don't know that. Right. That's right.
Oh, yeah. In fact, slavery, you know, was the right of conquest.
Yeah.
You know, ironically enough, the people who stopped slavery were the Brits. You know, everyone talks about them as the ultimate colonialists. Well, they're the ones who stopped the slave trade. The African slave trade was cut off in the early 19th century. And also, ironically enough, even while the United States had slaves, we cut off the African slave trade. So the only slaves here were people who were born here, and we helped the British cut off the African slave trade. Because, you know, with the exception of probably 20 to 40% of Americans, everybody knew this was evil. Just like, well, how do you get rid of it?
Yeah,
and,
right.
And the answer apparently was by killing 500,000 people, you know.
Yeah, I just heard, I didn't know this. I just read just recently that during the American Revolution time, only 1% of the American population owned slaves.
Oh, yeah.
Very few people actually owned slaves, right?
Yeah, and they were very highly concentrated. In fact, I mean, most Americans in the South were poor. You had an aristocracy, and then, you know, it was much more medieval than the North.
Right.
You know, it was almost a form of feudalism.
I'm going to use this as a segue. You also wrote a piece the last couple of weeks about how we need the elites, even though they failed us. And I just thought this was brilliant, David, because you're absolutely right. We need these people, and yet they fucked us recently.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. I mean,
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot. And, you know, if I didn't have, you know, I write six pieces a day, you know, you could write a book about this. But first of all societies have some form of an elite. You know, going back to, well, hunter-gatherers even, you know, where basically you had the strong versus the weak, but, you know, even, you know, most tribal societies picked people based upon their fact, you know, the fact that they could defend people. Well,
right.
As society modernized over time, we've gotten this ever finer division of labor. You know, I mean, think about if you or I had to make decisions about everything all the time. Is impossible. I mean, you know, there's a reason why there's a division of labor.
Yeah.
Which is different people are good at different things, and part of wealth is specialization.
Right. I got to stop you for a second.
Yeah.
Because here's the deal with the prepper community. God bless them. I'm glad they're doing what they're doing. I'm giving up.
Yeah.
I am not going to grow my own food. I'm not going to be shooting it. I have relatives who still do this. I can't. I'm a city guy, you know, and it's like if the whole thing goes to hell, well, come just shoot me. It's like I'm giving up, you know.
Yeah, I mean, in such societies, there is a group of people who survive, but it's generally a relatively small group of people. And you're going to have an elite even in those, the people who are best at
this.
You know, they're going to be leaders. Now,
I have to tell you something. This is a relative of a friend. So he's a prepper. And I don't know, we're sitting around a campfire. This is like 2 years ago drinking. And he knows I do this, bro, you know. And he says, you know, we kind of need a leader. Do you want to do it? No. No, you just asked the wrong guy.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. No, I'm not your leader. No, I can't. I don't know. You know, it's not even that I wouldn't want to. I like these people. I have no problem with it. Yeah. But you don't want me. Anyway, I'm sorry.
That's fine.
I can do it.
You know, I mean, there were a lot of commentators on my piece who didn't like the term elite. So we could throw in experts instead, although I think the elite is bigger than that. You need to have a group of people who, you know, just become hyper-educated and generalists, are liberally educated. So who, in some way or another, many of them are not experts. They're generalists.
Yeah, I was going to say that expert is not a good word. Matter of fact, offhand, I can't think of another better word than elite. Can you?
Mm-mm. I chose it knowing that a lot of people are going to go, elite, it sounds horrible. And it does. But, I mean, think about during the Cold War, after World War II. We actually had a very good elite, not perfect.
Oh, yeah, the greatest generation. I mean, it was fantastic, yeah.
And, you know, they helped put together a structure in the world. I hate to use this term, but a world order, which worked incredibly well. I mean, you saw the greatest explosion in human prosperity. The lowest percentage of human beings dying in conflicts, and, you know, a relatively stable world situation that led to just tremendous things. I mean, you know, we went from, you know, in 1945, the world was, you know, on its knees.
Yeah.
The British Empire with, collapsed. I mean, just literally collapsed. The United States was left standing alone. But 15 years later, or what was it, 25 years later, we're on the moon. Everybody's got a car. Europe is put back together. And we have a world trade system that works. And if everything had just gone back to like asking people, what should we do? Everybody would say, oh my God, you know, let's just go back to isolationism. It's very attractive. Create an autarkic system, you know, one country, screw everyone else. And that would have been a horrible mistake.
Yeah.
What you needed was people who understood history, it's not that they were perfect. I mean, they made a lot of mistakes, but they were generalists who had a good grasp of history. And our founding fathers very much understood this and the way that they designed the system to keep the elite in check. Because as much as you need these people, they divided the power up so that you didn't have a unified group, but you had groups that were competing for power and wealth. That system worked very well.
You said in your piece, which I think was like master of the obvious brilliant stuff, is the fact that the rise of populism is happening, not even in America, but across the globe, really. Because the elites have failed us right now.
Yep.
So, and you're right, temporarily they have. I mean, the whole thing's gone to hell. I mean, shit. I mean, you're talking about 1965, 1970. Yeah, we're on the moon. Everything's going great. Here we are 50 years later. I mean, for all practical purposes, first of all, the media hasn't worked for at least 20 years, if not 30.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody. And, well, talk about this. Okay. you didn't talk about this in your piece. Why did the elites go to hell? What happened?
I think there were a substantial number of things. I mean, some of it was there were inherent, I don't want to call them weaknesses, but fissures that were underneath that go back, you know, 50 or 100 years. I mean, you know, the biggest was the ideological component, you know, the communists, basically. But the Vietnam War undermined people's trust in the elite. I mean, yeah. Don't forget, you know, under Kennedy, all those people were the best and the brightest.
Right.
You know, they were all Harvard. You had McNamara, who had been the CEO of Ford.
Yeah.
I mean, yep. You just...
And there was the impression... Correct me if I'm wrong, that if Kennedy had lived, we probably wouldn't have gotten into the Vietnam War at all. I mean, he seemed to be making moves to get us out of there. Would you agree with that?
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of historical debate about that. There's a real question about whether we have sort of idolized Kennedy because you know, well, I mean, he makes a great martyr. I mean,
yeah,
I
well,
think,
he does.
I have to tell you,
I have kind of gone the opposite. I went over, for years, I've been going under the impression that he was basically overrated because of the romanticism of the whole thing and the fact he died. Now I'm starting to, when I look back now, I'm starting to think he was really trying to do some really cool shit, which was the reason he basically got stopped. You know, I don't know. That's so my feeling is kind of the reverse.
Well, we should do a show debating. I'll take the position that if Nixon had won in 1960, in fact, I wrote a piece saying this, if Nixon had won in 1960, the world would have been a much better place.
Oh, interesting. That's really interesting. Well, is that because of Kennedy's ideology, or do you think
no.
Nixon just would have executed much better, much faster?
Well, I think the problem with Kennedy, and I don't want to get too far off on this tangent because we should do an entire show on this, alternate history. The problem with Kennedy was not his ideology. Actually, Kennedy and Reagan were actually very close in ideological terms.
Yeah.
You know, Kennedy was not a huge welfare stater. He was anti-communist to the core. The problem with Kennedy really boils down to he really, really fucked up with the Bay of Pigs.
Oh, yeah, and, for sure.
And people think about that in isolation. But in fact, the Bay of Pigs led to the Berlin Wall. Most people don't know the Berlin Wall was built during Kennedy's.
Yeah, that's right.
So you had the Berlin Wall, the Bay of Pigs, and from there you got the Cuban Missile Crisis. All and you know, in the first two, Kennedy came off as very weak to
yeah.
the Soviets, which is yeah. why they took the step. With the Cuban Missile Crisis, they figured we can, you know, Kennedy's weak.
Right, we can face this guy, right, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, everyone looks back at the Cuban Missile Crisis and says, wow, Kennedy, like, won that round. But, you know, it'd be like if Joe Biden went back into Afghanistan and kicked out the Taliban.
Yeah.
It's like... Yeah, well, why are the Taliban in charge?
That's actually a really good analogy. That's very good. You're absolutely right. That's right.
So,
yeah.
And then, I mean, just to complete the analysis, in 1963, the Soviet Union had far fewer nuclear weapons. They had pursued what, very similar to the Chinese policy until recently, which was just have enough.
Yeah.
To deter the United States. But we were by far the dominant nuclear power. By by the end of the 1960s, after the Cuban Missile Crisis, I mean, Khrushchev said after the Cuban Missile Crisis, we're never going to be in that position again. And they went from a few hundred nuclear weapons to 30,000 in less than a decade.
Yeah.
And so you had this enormous expansion. And, you know, it's... But when Kennedy went in, tensions were not that high with the Soviet Union. And they were competing with us on scientific grounds, not so much on military grounds.
When you were talking about Nixon, let's forget that alternative history for a moment and go to 68 when Nixon was actually elected. There's a lot of people who think that if it wasn't for Watergate, if you took Watergate out of the equation, Nixon would have went down as a truly great president. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. And here's a bit of evidence for you. I grew up in a Nixon-hating household. I mean, absolute, you know, he was the devil. And now I talk to my dad, and he says, you know, Nixon was actually a pretty good president.
Yeah.
And I mean, he hated Nixon, you know, with a passion. And my first involvement in politics was actually going out and handing out McGovern bumper stickers. I was 8 years old. And,
you were an 8 year old liberal.
Exactly.
Because all 8 year olds are liberals.
Yeah. Well, there's something kind of bizarre about the notion of being that young and already under the impression, you know, thinking, well, you know, I think, you know, Burke was kind of right. You know, we need to have, you know, these institutions, you know, that go back. Hey, Colonel. You know.
Oh, my God. So, oh, yeah.
Anyway,
that's good.
I kind of like this, you know?
Yeah, I do, too. I like it, too. It's happened regularly. I talk to people all the time. The cats are always walking in front. Yeah. Okay, let me run another scenario by you. So I've always said that the I can't remember what actually day that they broke in. It was in March 72 when they broke into the Watergate complex, you know?
Something like that.
Something like that. So, okay, so now... Historians pretty much agree Nixon didn't know that they were going to do that. So he's truly innocent in that regard. If Nixon had got up in the press room the next day and said, look, a bunch of our guys got into the Democratic National Headquarters, they committed a crime, we're really sorry, we're going to prosecute them to the full extent of the law. So no one would remember this. This would all have been to history. You know, I don't have to tell you, the problem is the cover-up, not what they did. You know?
Yeah. And, you know, the ironic thing, I don't know if it's ironic, but this was, you know, sort of the where you've got the first bit of lawfare getting into politics. Because, I mean, what the Nixon campaign did was small potatoes compared to what was done during the Johnson administration and even during the Kennedy administration. I mean, you have to remember Robert Kennedy had Martin Luther King bugged. And the White House was sending letters to Martin Luther King Jr. suggesting he commit suicide. I mean,
could you explain something to me? I don't understand how the Kennedy campaign could get away with courting the mafia and then winning and turning around and saying, we're going to get rid of your fucking ass. How could you not think that there's going to be retribution? You know, I don't understand, you know.
I don't know. I mean, it certainly had a dramatic impact on our history.
Yeah.
But I don't know what drove it. I mean, obviously the Kennedy family had a longstanding relationship with the mob.
Right.
Just as Johnson, I mean, Johnson's version of politics when he was in Texas was incredibly violent. You know, I mean, the stuff that they did in southern Texas to coerce, you know, Hispanics to vote for Johnson, and the amount of voter fraud that was involved there and in Chicago, you know, it was generally at least suspected, maybe even understood, that the 1960 election was won through shenanigans.
Yeah. Now, and I, at this point, I think that's a generally accepted historical view, and that is that Kennedy or Kennedy's father specifically cheated in Cook County, and the election was, yeah, it's still one of the closest elections in American history, and that flipping that one county flipped Illinois, and that flipped the electoral count, you know? I mean, it's really amazing.
It is. Well, you know, one of, to me, one of the most fascinating psychological things that I've seen is how liberals will simultaneously come out and explain to you how the 2016 election was stolen and then turn around and say that it's absolutely inconceivable and a conspiracy theory that a 2020 election could be,
yeah,
stolen.
I know.
And that's election denialism. And,
right,
you know,
right,
it's just, it's like, well, I mean, how do you,
yeah,
think? I mean, how,
yeah,
do you hold these ideas? You know, and I just look at this in a practical, well, first of all, I have a little bit of personal experience because I've participated in two recounts, and I can tell you that here in the state of Minnesota, they go in the nursing homes and they have electoral officials vote for people.
Yeah. Okay,
and
I got to stop you. And this is,
yeah,
probably too inside for the audience, but I don't care. Did Norm Coleman get screwed?
Norm Coleman got screwed.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
but, I mean, here's the flip side. Republicans are very bad at this sort of stuff.
Yes, we're terrible. I'd say we, I shouldn't, probably, but.
I mean, it was actually quite shocking because I participated in that recount.
Yeah.
And I remember going
You want to quickly explain to people watching what exactly we're talking about?
Well, what was it? 2000 and something. I forget.
Yeah,
what
I can't remember either. It's Coleman versus
Franken, I think.
Franken, right. That's right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Very close election. And when I, you know, my wife Margaret and I think it was in Hutchinson, which is west of the Twin Cities, we were the Republican counters,
uh-huh,
and you're across from Democrats. And before you go in, you know, you get an education from your party. Here's what you do. You know, here's how you challenge ballots. And here are the criteria.
And if I'm right, there were 3 million votes cast, and I think on election night, Coleman was ahead by about 100 votes, right, out of 3 million. So it's really, really – now, we have also have the automatic recount here on, you know, less than 0.5%. So it was razor thin. So go ahead.
Yeah. And we went in there, and first of all, the Democrats had lawyers pretty much at every single recount area. So they're in there, and they're – you know, advising. Republicans probably had, you know, 10 lawyers for the entire state.
Right.
And the Democrats were told, if there's anything that you can challenge a ballot on, challenge it. You know, if it's a Norm Coleman ballot.
Right.
We were told only challenge if it's pretty clear that there's, you know, something really wrong.
Yeah.
With this. Well, as a practical matter, their strategy just was better. I mean, they had a much bigger pool of challenge ballots that then go to, you know, up the legal chain. And
right.
So they were able to toss, I mean, it really was about tossing out ballots. Oh, this is spoiled. And more Norm Coleman ballots got tossed out than Al Franken ballots, and that's how they won. And that's because they had a really good legal strategy. And, you know, that's been pretty much the case for the past 20 years. Republicans just suck at this.
Yes.
And the Democrats have gotten more and more and more sophisticated.
As a matter of fact, I got to be honest with you. I'm amazed the Republicans win anything when you can consider the stuff, you know? I mean, the Democrats are so good at it, and
yes.
The Republicans are so poor. It's amazing, you know, and yet we're still kind of competing. That's really amazing. Before you go on, one more thing, too. My friend Jeff Meyer at Conk News, he said, and I'm curious to see if you agree with this, that the Coleman kind of a test case to see if they can get away with the shenanigans. Do you think there's anything to that?
I think there is some, although they have gotten so much more sophisticated since then. You know, their goal is, of course, to keep it away from anything close to a recount. And,
right.
I think what a lot of people don't understand is you don't actually have – now, I'm not saying that there's never any shenanigans about, you know, changing the vote totals by putting in fake ballots and all of that. But you don't need any of that. Just the ballot harvesting, you know, all sorts of things that are perfectly legal but perfectly immoral.
Yeah.
And then you toss on top of that. I mean, in fact, just yesterday there was a hearing where the three about voting in Congress, and the three Democratic witnesses, none of them would say outright that non-citizens should not vote. And, you know, so there are all these states. Just think about this for a second. There are a bunch of states out there where they will give you a driver's license, no questions asked, no citizenship requirement, no green card, no documentation at all, Minnesota being one of these states. And we have motor voter. There is no question that there are lots of illegal immigrants who are registered to vote. And we know that partly because some people who are on the path to citizenship, you know, they came here legally. They got visas and green cards, are on the path to citizenship, and they find out that they've got an obstacle, which is they're registered to vote. And it's like, well, I didn't register to vote. And it turned out to be a motor voter thing. But that's something where you could get kicked out of the country if you get caught.
Yeah.
Now, if you are someone who came here illegally, you know, you may be a perfectly nice person, but one thing we know absolutely beyond the shadow of the doubt is they are perfectly willing to violate American laws.
Right? We know this because they're here.
Exactly.
It's the very definition of their existence, right?
Yes, and there's all this infrastructure that has been built in nonprofits and social service agencies, all about integrating these people into society, getting them welfare and housing and driver's licenses and all that. And if you think that there is not encouragement for some of these people to get out and vote, after all, you don't even have to speak English to go vote. You don't need an ID to vote. Here in Minnesota, all you have to do is walk up and say, that guy is going to vouch for me, and boom, you can vote.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the entire system is rigged. And, you know, when people say, well, prove it, it's like, well, how could I possibly prove it? You have taken away every single way that I can check. I mean, it is impossible. I mean, it's to the point now where we have lawsuits regularly where there are laws on the books that say you have to clean up your voter rolls because people die, they move, you have to make sure that people, I mean, there are vast numbers of people who are registered to vote at addresses that don't even exist. I just saw a documentary or story about a homeless shelter that had 1,000 people who had that address to register to vote. That was their residence. It's like, well, who are these people? Where are they? And now that we mail out ballots, that means 1,000 ballots go to this homeless shelter.
Yeah.
And then you think that a lot of those don't get returned, not by the people who supposedly, I mean, it's like, come on. And there's no way to check.
Right.
And that's what the Democrats are pushing for.
David Strom, first part of our interview with him from Wednesday afternoon. Fascinating guy. He's done so much. He's worked on presidential campaigns. He was a history major at Carleton College, the Harvard of the Midwest. We joke about that. It's like it's in a little town here in Minnesota, but it does have that reputation. And people who people have gone there have a tendency to be liberal. And like me, David is a former liberal. And I guess we both saw the light or something. I don't know. Anyway, the second half of that interview plays on Monday. So, and he talks about, the guy writes 6 pieces a day, 5 days a week for Hot Air. I don't know how he does it. And his writing's brilliant. It's just brilliant. Now, we're going to pull this weekend, I will post a link to his author page on hotair.com. You can go read some of that stuff. But we'll play the second half of the interview on Monday. So before we leave here tonight, I want to address the fact that Pentagon has released a report they did through the, I always get this confused, it's the ARRO office, the anomalous something aerial, whatever. About, and they said basically they plowed through 80 years of records and can find nothing that would lead them to conclude that there's any extraterrestrial life out there. Okay, so let's try this. Those things that have been flying around, the fighter pilots at the Nimitz and all over the place, you know, hell, on the East Coast at the Roosevelt, you know, what was it, Ryan Graves said they saw these things every year, every day for over 2 years, that they were commonplace. They stopped tracking them because they these little tic-tac things flying around. All right. So there's either three things going on here. Either those are ours, that would be the federal U.S. government, and we haven't told other branches about the military about it, and there's something to that. I'll get that. They belong to China or Russia. In which case, like Tim Burchett, the congressman, said, if that's the case, we're screwed. yeah, that they're the only two countries, other countries on the planet who could even come up close to doing anything like that. Or they're from outside of the Earth, you know, and that's extraterrestrials. And like, what's his name? Oh, God, now it's going to, Christopher Mellon, the guy who was the Deputy Secretary of Defense. He said nobody in Washington, he wrote this in a piece from about a year and a half, 2 years ago. Nobody in Washington wants to say the A word. The A word is aliens. So you have those three choices. They're either ours, they belong to China or Russia, or they belong to a civilization not on Earth. Now, these things regularly, by their own existence, they display characteristics that are beyond our physics. So you're going to tell me that Russian did that. Now, when it comes to the fact that they could be ours, and I've said this before, I actually think my personal speculation, only my opinion now, I have no evidence, but based on what I know, I think a lot of them are ours. They're based on, they were built because we reverse engineered crash extraterrestrial space technology. That's why we have them, if that's the case. I don't know if that's true or not. But either not Russian or Chinese, I know that for sure. We are easily the most technologically competent country on the planet, not even close. So the Pentagon plows through 80 years of UFO records and comes to the conclusion, oh, no. There's nothing here that points to the fact that they're from outer space. Oh, bullshit. You are lying your fucking ass. All right, like I said, explain this. So you got three choices, and those are the only three available choices. Not because I say so. Logic dictates this. They're either ours, they're Chinese or Russian, or they're from another planet. That's it. Take your pick. You know, and like I said, most of these things defy our known laws of physics. So what do you think, huh? They're peddling. That's what they're doing. You know, so, you know, what's his name? David Grush stands up in Congress and said, we have crashed extraterrestrial space down. They don't want people to know this. They don't. And who knows why? There's been a debate, not even a debate, a struggle going on in the Pentagon for years on whether they should tell people that they know there's things from on other planets. Because a lot of, first of all, they give up their technological superiority advantage if they admit it to other countries. So you have an actual national security issue here by telling the public you tell everyone on Earth, right? Okay, so there's that. That's actually legitimate, you know? Then there's the fact that some people think the public is not ready for it. Now, Jazz Shaw is coming on this, he's coming on the show 2 weeks from today, and we'll talk about this again. Because him and I have a little disagreement on this. He thinks that Americans can handle this. And I kind of think that too now, but my point is I don't think a lot of the rest of the world can. And once again, if we tell the American public, you tell everybody. So there's that too. So and then there's the third thing, and this has been coming out more and more, and I've heard that this is legitimate. I mean, you may laugh at this and scoff, but there's people in the military and apparently some high-ranking generals who think that this is actually has something to do with demonic possession. In other words, this is a religious phenomena and not a technological or an extraterrestrial one. And yeah, okay, you can laugh. You go right ahead. But, you know, but they think that, and, you know, and there's another thing I've heard too, and that is that they don't want to tell the public because they think that this is so unbelievable the public wouldn't believe it, and that is that these things are actually truly from a quote-unquote another dimension that actually resides on Earth. In other words, they're from Earth, but they're from a dimension we can't access. So in other words, the theory is that we are sharing the planet with another civilization and we are not aware of them. Now, if you know anything about dimensionality, first of all, string theory, which is probably at this point likely to be true, it is more and more stuff about string theory gets confirmed all the time. Although it still is not, you know, there's theories like the theory of relativity where we've essentially proved it, but technically there's still theories. This is not one of those things. String theory is still up to conjecture. But according to string theory, there's 11 dimensions in our universe, and we humans can only access 4 of them. And we're not, you know, we may be able to design equipment technology that can access the rest of them. But as humans, we will never, ever, we do not have the ability to see beyond 4 dimensions. I mean, I have seen people trying to come up with visual representations of what the 5th or 6th dimension might look like. Oh, God, like, you know, just give it up. It's like, it's not going to happen. But we might be able to come up with technology that can sense it. That's true. But the point is, sharing the planet with another civilization that lives in another dimension, literally, we would not know it as humans. We would not, there's no way we would ever be able to access that. Now, the thing is also about dimensionality is that if you're living in like the 7th dimension, you'd have no trouble accessing the lower dimensions. I mean, here's an example. We live in a 3D world. Now, I said 4 dimensions, but I'm including time in that, which is a legitimate dimension. But in terms of physical space, we have height, width, and depth. We have 3 dimensions. So if if we were dealing with a civilization or some phenomena that only existed in 2 dimensions, we could access that. what that would look like, that's simple. It's a piece of paper. Everything's flat. That's the way it looks. And everything in that world, if there's people living in that world, they don't know they're flat, but they're flat, right? Okay, so now if you got something in the fourth or fifth dimension looking down on us, you know, they see our 3D world, but they're in a 4D world and we can't see it. So that is the analogy that I will use to explain that to you. But there are people who are saying this is actually going on, and they don't want to tell the public because they don't think the public could understand it literally and conceptually, and that's probably true. How would you explain to somebody that there's somebody living in another house on top of the house that you have, and you can't see them or tell? You know, I mean, it's like, it's just the whole thing gets nuts. And this is where quantum physics has brought us. I tried to explain this to my friends about quantum. You know, there's the famous experiment that basically proves quantum physics exists. And you can look this up online. It's called the double slit experiment. And it was done originally done in like the 1940s, but it's never failed. And it basically says that light exists in both a particle and a wave simultaneously, but you can measure one. If you measure one, you can't measure the other. And it basically proves the whole quantum physics phenomena. I've tried to explain to my friends about quantum physics, and I've had some very, very intelligent people tell me, well, that's bullshit. And no, it's not. like for example, in quantum physics, observing an experiment can change the results of the experiment. I'm not talking about looking at the data. I'm actually talking about literally standing in front of the goddamn machine and looking at it can change the data. Yeah. And people can, you know, my highly educated friend, he doesn't understand this. He says, no, you're talking about no, I'm not talking about the data. I'm talking about literally standing there watching it changes the data. And he said, well, no. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Right. So, all right. Yeah. So anyway, the Pentagon's trying to tell you and us and me that none of these things are from other planets. Yeah, sure. Yeah, you keep on talking like that. That's bullshit. Folks, I mean, here's my thing. Once again, my personal opinion, but I've been studying this for 30, 40 years. Not only are extraterrestrials visiting Earth, they're actually all over the fucking place. They're flying around all over the place. So it's like, and we don't see them because they make certain that we don't. So, yeah, and you can call me nuts. Don't care. I don't care. Don't care if you call me nuts. Because I think I'm being proven right. For years, I was the guy saying, and this is the reason I have the thing on the introduction of this show that says King of Conspiracies. I was the guy saying we have crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft. I had people tell me I was crazy. You're nuts. You're crazy. It's bullshit. And then in December 2017, the government comes out and says, oh, yeah. These things are flying around and we don't know what they are. Yeah. And I have people now that won't talk to me because I was right. It's like, all right, fine. Yeah. It's okay. All right. So now there's things that I don't necessarily talk about because I don't know if they're true. One, for example, is that not only are extraterrestrials visiting us regularly, they're actually living among us. I don't know if that's true or not. I have nothing. There are people who say this. I have no, like, corroborating evidence of any kind to indicate this is true. The only possible thing is, and this has been known for many, many years, apparently since the 1950s, that there's a species of extraterrestrials that look completely identical to humans. Matter of fact, they're basically humans living on another planet. In other words, we even share DNA. They're the same. So you never know. You would never know. You could go to the doctor, take the DNA test, you know, go to get an X-ray. They have spleens, all that bullshit. But they are us. They're humans living on another planet. Now, how that happened, I have no idea. It's so, you know, some people say, well, no, it's not that they're human. You know, that they seeded this. Who knows? I have no proof of that. But that's the only thing I've ever heard. You know, that these people, I'll call them people again, could get away with living here. And they, you could, in the dining room of McDonald's, and you never know. Supposedly that's true. But I have no evidence of that. I don't know. I'm just telling you what I hear. That's what I do here. Once again, I want to apologize for the last couple of days. Just complete bullshit. So the ship has been righted now and we're going forward. You have a really nice weekend. We don't do Friday shows here. This is Monday through Thursday, live at 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central. So our next show is Monday, next coming Monday. And what's that, the 18th, right? We have part two of our interview with David Strom. That's going to be this coming Monday. And then on Tuesday, Les Velez, the founder and chairman of the Opus Project, where they the support groups for alien abductees. So that's our, we got the whole week planned out, basically the rest of the month. We got it going on. I'm Jim Peters. I want to thank you for watching. This is episode number 96. So a week from Monday, we do our 100th episode. We'll break out some champagne or something. I want to thank you for watching very much. Really appreciate it. Uncle Donnie, and good night to you, wherever you are. I'll see you on Monday. Have a nice weekend.